I take tonight is calculated to prevent any overlap in these subjects. Ordinarily, when we mention the word minor, we think almost immediately of a school semester and perhaps a school program, and we think of a minor as always involving something in which we have secondary interest, perhaps even secondary ability. At any rate, we weren't confident enough or didn't think highly enough of it to make it a major. What do you suppose that God considers in our lives to be the least important? Because I don't want to approach this from the point of view of ability or interest, but rather importance. Are there areas of our life that to God just really don't matter much, that we make very important? And I think the answer is yes. So I'd like to mention some of these areas, and then I think I can show you why our concern does make minor things into major issues. Does God really care what you eat? After all, Paul said to Timothy, 1 Timothy 4, verse 4, which gives me the impression one could eat anything, every creature of God is good, nothing to be refused if it be received with thanksgiving, because it is sanctified by the word of God in prayer. Therefore, almost everything on this earth could conceivably be used for food. When he used the word creature, I would assume he was talking about animals, birds, fish, and of course the entire plant kingdom. Anything and everything and all of those could be used for food, so long as we're thankful for it, because a prayer of thanksgiving sanctifies or sets it apart as appropriate and good. So God apparently has no great concern about what we eat. And I think that's accurate to say, that he didn't care what we ate downstairs tonight. Didn't make any difference at all to him. The variety, or even that we did it the way we did, none of that would be of any concern to God, except perhaps approving of the fellowship and the generosity that went hand in hand with this preparation and serving. Of course, we can't be gluttons, because Solomon tells us that gluttons become poor. And I think they would become poor of spirit as well as poor financially. Now, I think common sense tells me that I shouldn't put anything in my body that disagrees with it. If extremely hot flavoring gives me a stomachache, I should have sense enough not to eat it. In other words, that which upsets my body, makes me sick, in all probability, I should let alone, and would have every right to logically let alone. Now, is food unimportant to us? Just suppose, for example, that you had never heard a single argument over where we're going to eat tonight, what we're going to eat, or who eats what. Just suppose you'd never heard a single argument about that. But you have, haven't you? And you've been involved in them. In other words, sometimes rather inconsequential things like where, or who might be there, or who might not be there. I have seen young people absolutely go into fits almost because of who might or might not be at an eating place. So they must be there. I mean, this is emergency. They have to be there. But I have heard disputes and things of this kind also from older persons. Is there anyone here who is a meat and potatoes person? I've heard that expression several times. Why is that? Is that because your stomach wouldn't accept anything else, or because your mind won't? That isn't stomach, that's mind. In other words, what we are mentally accustomed to is what we think is fit to eat. Our stomach has little to do with that. Because if something could be poked down you so that you wouldn't taste it, you would be literally amazed to find that the things you can't stand, you could digest just fine. You just can't get them past your head. That's the problem with so many foods. And what about that meat and potato person? Have you ever tried to get him to eat anything else? And you think food isn't important to us? Oh, sometimes food is critically important. What about the woman who has certain food tastes and her husband's differ radically from hers? What does she do? Does she cook for him? Does she cook for herself? Or does she cook for both? Now, this can be an extremely serious problem. And every so often, problems like this lead to divorce. Such things as food choices. And sometimes these get to be very, very serious problems. Now, just suppose that when we went downstairs tonight to eat, you had seen 100 loaves of bread and 20 large platters of broiled fish. How would you have reacted? Some of you would have turned up your noses. And the majority of us would not have been satisfied at all, would we? And yet that is precisely what Jesus fed 5,000 hungry people, and I don't believe there's a complaint for many of them. We think food doesn't matter to us. Oh, yes, it does. We insist on variety. We insist on a bountiful supply. We insist on very careful, clean preparation. You'd be surprised how many hang-ups we have about food. There are very few people who will eat just practically anything. Now, some people can't. If a person can't eat salt, for example, if it has adverse effects on the body, or certain foods are not compatible with a certain illness, of course we have to be cautious and careful. But how many of us ever try to develop a cosmopolitan attitude toward food? In other words, whatever you put before me, I will say thanks for and eat it gratefully. Would anyone here offer to do that for a month? Food makes a lot more difference to us than it does to God, doesn't it? We are far more concerned about it than He is. He wants us to have food. He knows the body needs it. But what we eat is of no consequence to Him, but it's of great consequence to us. In other words, we make a major issue very often where God doesn't care at all. To Him, it's minor, unimportant, doesn't matter. But it matters a great deal to us. And there are times when you get your mouth just primed for a certain thing. And how do you react when it isn't available or you can't get it? Is it a minor thing? Or is it big enough to trigger a little frustration, a little anger, a little disgust, or a little something that probably would be better not felt? Well, you know the answer to that. So it isn't unusual at all for men to make a big deal out of things that God cares nothing about. Besides food, how would you answer this question? Does God care what you wear? Well, He wants it to be modest. We do have an instruction about that. 1 Timothy 2:9, spoken primarily about women, but I believe the principle would be true with both sexes. And the word modest simply means that I don't wear anything that causes undue attention to be paid to me. That's either because of extreme style, could be because of a number of things. Now, there are some types of clothing that can't be worn modestly. And the reason I say this is that I've heard some people say, Well, as long as we kind of stay in the middle of the style range, a little conservative, we'll be all right. Not with some clothing. There is some clothing no Christian should ever wear. And let me enumerate so you know what I'm talking about. I just simply don't believe that we should wear see-through clothing or skin-tight clothing or clothing that is minuscule in its covering ability or that we should wear extreme styles simply because in all of those there are some unfavorable problems and connotations. So there are some kinds of clothing that we should never put on simply because of the type it is. I might mention also that some of the newer bathing suit styles that I've seen, no child of God should ever put on. You might as well be naked. And I might remind you that God makes no distinction between men and women when he disapproves of nakedness. He makes no distinction. We do in our society, but God didn't make that distinction. Remember, he made clothing for both Adam and Eve, not just Eve. He made clothing to cover both. He meant for both to be covered. That was his obvious intent. We might remember, too, in the area of clothing, that every time in the New Testament the word naked is used, it is used in a negative sense, either to represent waste, sin, or something undesirable. Every time it is used, it is in a negative sense. It's never used even once in an, shall we say, a neutral sense. Never in a positive sense, always in a negative sense. In other words, God is very consistent with his disapproval of nakedness. And I believe that would include clothing that approaches that very closely. God simply doesn't approve of that. But you can wear any color. I guess you could wear any size you wanted to. You could tie it to you somehow. None of this would make any difference to God. If you like white, wear white. If you like black, wear black. God doesn't care. None of these things matter to him. The styles, the distinctions, as long as we follow his guidelines, nothing else matters. But oh my goodness, how clothing matters to us. Is there a young person here? And when I say young person, I mean between the ages of about 12 and 16. Is there even one of you here who doesn't know what brand name is in right now? And is there one of you who doesn't want it? I doubt it. No, when tight legs are in, we've got to have tight legs, haven't we? And some of these things look ridiculous, but we've got to have them anyway, because that's the end thing. And this isn't just in the world. I see these in the church, too. In other words, we very much admire a lot of the clothing styles and techniques used by the world. And how many times have you stood before a closet bitterly disappointed because you have nothing to wear and you've only got a couple of closets full of clothing? But you've got nothing to wear. Clothing doesn't matter to you? Oh, yes, it does. Why, when you shop for clothing, do you sometimes buy something quite expensive? Not always by impulse, sometimes by design. And why do you feel so good in that expensive garment? Have you ever analyzed your feelings? You put on something new and you preen just a little bit. Ever analyzed your feelings? Are these things unimportant to you? No, they're not. These things are very important. So again, we're making big issue many times out of something that to God could matter less. Well, let me mention another area. Does God care what kind of car you drive? I don't see how he could, because there weren't any cars in the Garden of Eden. God didn't create any. And he never gave us any cautions about driving cars, so I'm sure cars don't matter to God in the least. Do cars matter to us? They don't matter to God, but I know they matter to us. Some people love their car. I mean love it. They polish it. They vacuum it. They park it two car widths away from every other car in the parking lot so nothing can touch it. That car's unimportant to you? Oh, no, it isn't. That car's everything to you. How do we select a vehicle, brethren? Let's just get right down to objective cases. How do we select it? Because it will give us adequate transportation, adequate mileage, and have adequate durability. And there are no other considerations, huh? That's a joke. In fact, very frequently, those aren't the prime considerations at all. The name of that car is very important to a lot of people, because that means prestige. Now, why would an individual buy a $23,000 car instead of an $11,000 car, assuming that the $11,000 probably gets better gas mileage, maneuvers more easily, can be parked more easily, will deteriorate in cost less rapidly? Why do we want that $23,000 automobile? Because we feel like a big shot in it. We're sending a message. I've got money. Yes, we're sending a message. We don't buy according to common sense. We buy according to likes and dislikes. And if you don't believe it, look in the parking lot. Just look in the parking lot. How would you describe the feeling of driving down the road in a new car? How do you feel when you're doing that? Kind of want people to see you? Do, don't you? Be honest now. You want everybody to see this. What is that desire based on? Well, you know, that is a little thing called the pride of life. Yeah, that's that nasty little thing called the pride of life. Does God care what kind of house you live in? But oh, how we care. Some people spend 40, 50 years accumulating, working, remodeling, changing, until we get that house just exactly like we want it. And yet here we have no permanent dwelling. We are strangers and pilgrims on the earth, but we don't act a bit like it. We have made our nest and we're going to be there forever. That's the way we behave. Why do we accumulate expensive antiques? Unless we're going to sell, perhaps make a living. But I mean, why do we accumulate them to look at? Most of them aren't comfortable to sit on or sleep on. Why do we do this? That's another little thing called the pride of life. Does it make any difference to you where in town your house is? Does it make any difference to you what it looks like? Does it make any difference to you how big your garage is? How many rooms? How many baths? Well, I'm told that housing is the single biggest investment we make. You mean bigger than the church? Oh, my, yes. Far and away bigger. How long would it take you to give in contributions what you spend for a house? It would take some people a lifetime and they still wouldn't get it done. I want you to think about these things, brethren. Things that don't matter to God mean everything to us. And every one of these things that I have mentioned is a physical thing. That isn't to be nearly that important to us. Aren't we told that this whole realm of things will just kind of be added to us? Aren't we told that? And the most essential thing isn't even in this area. Not even in any of these areas. This is a general way of saying that the things of this world that we are told not to love. We are told that loving these things makes us the enemy of God. But we are accumulators. We feel good because of the things we own, and we can't wait till we own something to feel good about it. See, we don't want to rent, we want to own. Pride of life. And you would be surprised if you will examine your food choices, your clothing choices. Examine your thinking about transportation. You're thinking about houses and where you live and what the house looks like, what you pay for it. Just examine all your thinking about that and check your priorities, see where they are. You're going to be surprised sometimes at what motivates you, at what causes you to make the decisions you do, and what makes you feel good about yourself. You'll be surprised. God looks at all of these areas as areas of choice where we are concerned. And since they are areas of choice, we very often take advantage of God's good nature. I have a feeling that's dangerous. When God tells me not to love these things, not to look on them as though they are permanent, not to spend my time, attention, interest, money, and everything else on these things. Let me close with this question. If you were cosmopolitan in your food tastes, so that you could eat most anything, wouldn't have to be expensive as long as it's decent. If you could live in a common house, keeps the rain out, keeps you warm, comfortable to live in, but not fancy, not expensive. If you could drive a car that is functional, useful, dependable, but again, not lifting you up with pride. And if you could be conservative and sensible in clothing, and not go pell-mell after the latest clothing styles, and the latest brand names, and all of the latest crazes, wouldn't you have a great deal more money to set aside for the Lord's work? And wouldn't you expend less energy, less concern for worldly things, and have more of that concern for spiritual things?